What's up, guys? Dave Lipson here, and welcome to another episode of the Love and Thunder podcast. We got another killer stud guest on our show today. Welcome, Kyle Ruth from Training Think Tank. Dude, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dave. It's awesome to be on here, and I'm excited for our topic today to talk about bodybuilding and CrossFit, dude.
So I had heard about Training Think Tank before. You know, I've just kind of had my ear to the ground in the whole CrossFit community. I've never really explored it very deeply. Tell us a little bit about it and what you do over there with those guys.
Well, Training Think Tank, we've been an organization since 2013. We've been coaching mostly competitive CrossFitters, you know, dabbled in some other areas. I mean, I've coached people in Ironman triathlons, high rocks, and some of the, you know, like the sports that kind of like are adjacent to CrossFit, but primarily
the sport of fitness in different capacities.
Exactly. Primarily working with CrossFitters, you know, just for that period of time, and primarily competitive CrossFitters. So it's been a long time, you know, 2013 to now. And actually, I've been coaching CrossFit for longer than that. Oh, wow. But that's primarily where we started. Now we've got, you know, all these online programs from, you know, a competitive track, a fitness track. We've got a bodybuilding track, which, you know,
oh, nice.
a topic of conversation today. And then, you know, we've got nutrition coaching. We've got the works. We're at this point, you know, kind of the full fitness spectrum. And the big thing that we've gotten into in just the last 2 years has been education, teaching,
well,
coaching.
Well, I'm telling you, that's what kind of popped out at me. Because as I looked at the site, you know, there's a lot of online fitness providers out there, right? Whether you're doing competitive CrossFit or if you're just trying to get in shape. I mean, everyone has a program or something that they're offering to help people remotely. But as someone who's been in the industry for a really long time, you don't always see these companies leveraging the education end as a method for creating credibility with clients, which is a great way to show like you've got knowledge, you're giving away good free information. So, you know, people have something to kind of be nurtured by. And then, I mean, I think that's the best way to actually create a client is, you know, create credibility, give them some stuff for free. And then now that they feel like they know you and, you know, what you're about and what your approach is, now they're, you know, you might take someone who has no idea who you are and make them an avid client because, you know, they're kind of already part of your crew coming to your site, reading your articles.
It's not only that, it's also that it makes you a more effective coach when you educate your clients, regardless of what the topic might be, whether it's, you know, improving their sleep hygiene or, you know, teaching them about heart rate zones. You know, if you're doing, you know, lots of zone two training and they need to understand the why. They need to have some buy-in for why they're doing training, why they're doing what they're doing in training. And when you get people bought into what, you know, they're doing on a day-to-day basis, they adapt better, they progress faster. And I think that's a key to successful coaching is actually also educating your clients.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many coaches I've become a fan of starting by just reading their articles. Like one of my good friends up in Canada, his name's Christian Thibodeau. He wrote for T Nation forever. And I'm like, before I even met Christian, I was a huge Christian fan because I'm like, he gets it. He understands me.
You know, like, yeah, I can't tell you how many articles I've read from Christian. You know, he's got such good information on there. The same thing is true for, you know, I think for a lot of coaches, they say, you know, that print is dead or reading is dead. Nobody reads today, but I do not think that is true. And that's why we actually kicked our blog back off. You know, we have the Corpus Animus podcast. It's a big podcast. You know, we've got, you know, a ton of listeners on the Corpus Animus podcast, and our Instagram channel is always, you know, we're always putting in, you know, stuff out on YouTube. But I think that sitting down and writing and communicating an idea clearly in writing so that people can take it, digest it, and actually put that stuff into practice it's just a little bit different than, you know, even a podcast like this. This is just the surface.
Yep, exactly. And I love what you said about, you know, enhancing the client's experience. So beyond the program of looking at like, okay, I'm going to do back squats and RDLs today, right? Being able to, you know, and this is the thing, like most training programs at a certain level, they're very interchangeable, right? Training program's a training program. That's not the real difference maker. The difference maker isn't what you're doing in the gym for that hour or 90 minutes. it's the other 23 hours that you have to fuck it up where the real difference is made. Creating not just a program, but a whole culture, a whole community, a whole lifestyle that goes where the program is just one cog in a vast wheel of things, all kind of working together, pushing people towards a singular goal. I think that is really where it's at, you know, like, and even beyond just the information, like the culture of like what you're about as a person, right? Like who you are, the people in your gym, because that culture, just like we talk about coaches and CrossFit gyms, and this was an analogy I made, like people, they kind of, all the members, they're kind of, you know, doing exactly what you do, one degree shittier. So they kind of emulate a lot the culture and the tone of the head coach. And you can see, you know, the coaches that are all about fun and community, they tend to attract a lot of athletes that are all about fun in the community. The coaches that are really kind of competition focused, they tend to attract a lot of competitive culture people in their gym. And then likewise, the coaches who are douchebags tend to attract a lot of other douchebags too. So, and that's hard online because you're not physically there with them. So it kind of comes across in your content and how you portray yourself and in your branding and the information. You know, so I told you the story about how I came across you, Chris. One of my coaches, Coach Sam David, we call him Cinnamon Thunder, big, strong guy, longtime military service member. You know, he's always on the feeds. He's a big, you know, perfect, like loves fitness, reads about it, lives the lifestyles, all about it. You know, it's probably his favorite thing, you know, to do recreationally. And he texted me really excited. And he's like, dude, they're talking about bodybuilding on Training Think Tank and you know, pairing it with CrossFit. You got to talk to these guys. Because I was like, yeah, Sam, like we've been doing it for a decade. Sure. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about this article that you wrote, right? And it was kind of all about like blending hypertrophy training and CrossFit together. Tell me like what you found out, what you learned.
Yeah. So digging into this, the whole idea kind of came from the battle that had, you know, raged on between bodybuilders and CrossFit at the beginning. And I've been involved since 2010. So I was very familiar with like, you know, the war that was happening.
It was even worse before that too, by the way.
Yeah. I'm not surprised by that at all.
I remember Greg Glassman saying, oh, mirrors are fucking stupid.
Yes. Like, and you know, I owned an affiliate for 5 years. You know, we had no mirrors and I was fully bought into the dogma of, you know, mirrors are stupid and bodybuilding, you know, bicep curls don't have a place in CrossFit. But, you know, having coached a lot of competitors, CrossFit Games level competitors, and you know people that are aspiring, I realized that like it's probably going to be impossible to get people to the level that is required now to be a CrossFit Games level competitor without doing some kind of accessory work. And what is accessory work in reality? I mean, it's like it's glorified or renamed bodybuilding. And so the whole idea of the article was to rethink bodybuilding in the sport of CrossFit. Like, let's talk about how we can actually use some of these things like isolation training, right? Like leg extensions. Let's think about how we might be able to integrate that into a CrossFit season, into a competitor's program. And, you know, I started there and the article just kept growing. It ended up into a two-part series where, you know, I dug into integrated bodybuilding, which is a more recent concept that kind of, you know, it's on the opposite end of the spectrum from your traditional kind of isolation bodybuilding. It's like kind of the bridge that spans the gap between isolation bodybuilding and sport performance. And so that's really what the article kind of entailed. It's long. I mean, I think in total it was like 16 pages.
There's a lot of good information in there. And, yeah. And if I was still, you know, a competitive CrossFit athlete looking to integrate more hypertrophy work into my program, it's something that I would read through and probably take notes on. You know, for about a decade, we've been making arguments for why it's so important to incorporate hypertrophy training into a CrossFit or functional fitness program. But one of these arguments is strictly about performance. And we start the conversation by saying, look, guys, elite athletes look like elite athletes. So, you know, there's a reason why you see the guys at the games with, you know, big boulder shoulders and quad sweeps and six pack abs and narrow hips and, you know, wider lats. There's a reason why Mike Trout is built like a brick shit house. There's a reason why LeBron James looks the way that he does. And whether it's the demands of their training that have allowed them to achieve that physicality, or if it's their physicality that has allowed them to meet the demands of their training, doesn't matter. What matters is that we recognize that there's a connection between aesthetics and performance. And they're not synonymous. They're not different from each other. They're actually both supportive of one another. And we go back to the level one content where we talk about different models of fitness and the list of the 10 general physical skills. And this is a list of like possible or probable adaptations someone could have to a fitness program. Straight out of the words of Greg Glassman. Actually, he took that list and retooled it for CrossFit. But having said that, it's things like cardiorespiratory endurance, stamina, strength, and flexibility, power, speed, coordination, accuracy, agility, and balance. And the first four are what are kind of termed as biological adaptations, meaning there's a physical change in the tissue where you might see things like increased mitochondrial density for increased cardiorespiratory capacity, increased muscle fiber size, increased muscle fiber length. And then the middle two, power and speed, are kind of influenced by both biological but also neurological adaptations, which are not changes in the tissue, but really in the efficiency by which the brain can communicate with the body. So inter and intramuscular coordination, you know, being able to recruit those motor units to put action on bones, be able to synchronize things so you're moving most efficiently, positions, patterns, that kind of stuff. And so those are primarily neurological, the things like coordination, accuracy, agility, and balance. But if you think about an intermediate level CrossFitter, right? So you say like, okay, I've got someone who already knows how to move. They have the positions of an overhead squat or a squat snatch. You know, they understand how to do a double under and do two rotations of the wrist for every hop. You know, they can kip and coordinate their body in these core to extremity patterns. What's happened is they've essentially become really good at cheating, right? So I think they've tapped out those neurological adaptations to a really high degree where there can still be improvements on the skill side, but they're going to pale in comparison to the improvements that can be made on the biological side of, instead of just focusing on the software and practicing the skills more, it's not about the software. It's more about the hardware, just increasing the physical size and strength, which is going to play into that cross-sectional size and strength of muscle is your contractile potential. So because you're already amazing and accessing your potential way more so than the average Joe who goes in the gym, where you stand to gain the most ground is increasing the size and strength of the machine. So that would be like the performance end. Related to that as well is the orthopedic side of things, because, you know, most people who are competitive at that intermediate or higher level, they have amazing capacity to really honestly hurt themselves pretty well. These critical areas of breakdown that are prone, we know they're going to, you know, we see a lot of issues with shoulders and backs and hips and knees. And it's honestly the injury side of things that pushed my wife Camille and I into really exploring hypertrophy, you know, 10 years ago, because we had no other choice, because we were like, shit, I can't just keep redlining every day and going as fast as I can, as heavy as I can, and just keep breaking down. I need to find a way to still be able to train hard, but not hurt myself. Hypertrophy is going to help increase the structural integrity of joints and the support that they have, so that when you do redline it, you've got the tissue there to support that. And then additionally, from the training perspective, because the most common players of injury are usually speed and load, like, hey, I went too fast and I got hurt, or I went too heavy and I got hurt. Good hypertrophy training, that's usually not a part of good hypertrophy training, like speed, momentum, one rep max lifts. Those are really the enemy and not going to really be very effective at muscle growth compared to lifting good volume with excellent control, exhausting muscles to failure within the parameters of, you know, controlling the contractile speed and keeping the tension on muscles. And just the technical components of, you know, when you do hypertrophy, you want every rep to be as pretty as possible, which when you compare that to like going as hard as you can with CrossFit, you usually see those reps getting as ugly as possible. So from my perspective, I was like, man, whether you're just trying to look awesome and, you know, you want to have that best looking physique and you don't care about your performance that much, or if you are, you know, really concerned with your performance, but you find yourself hitting plateaus where you're no longer able to kind of continue to make progress because you tapped out your potential, at least, you know, the neurological potential to a large degree. Or if you're just trying to find a way to train hard and not get hurt anymore, this needs to be a part of the program. And I don't think it's synonymous to just competitors either.
You touched on a couple of really important points here, I think. The first is the neurological adaptations happen first, right? So when my youngest daughter, my oldest daughter, she's getting into CrossFit right now. She's 11. And it's something that she's really into. And the first thing that we do is we teach skills, right? We don't load heavy. Now she's moving a barbell, but we're not loading heavy. We're not doing anything like that. Because the first thing that you do is you teach people the skills. But you're absolutely right. At some point, they have all the skills that are necessary, right? They can swing on the bar to do one or two kipping toes to bar, but they don't have the muscular strength and endurance to be able to string together multiple reps of that for an entire workout. But you do. You start with skill training first. If you're, you know, an effective coach and you're following a good pedagogy, then you're going to start there. That's always going to be your starting point. And you're going to end up with athletes that have all the skills required for the sport or all the skills required for the task that they're taking on, but they don't have, like you said, the hardware. And that is the slow component of training, building strength, building muscle mass, building, the engine under the hood that basically allows you to perform at a high level. And it's not just in CrossFit. It's like in sport in general, strength, speed, and power are, you know, like the kings of sport. And those things, they require time. They require time and dedicated training to build that. One of the things I identified in the article were, I was trying to think about, like, what are the top types of athletes that would benefit the most from isolation or functional bodybuilding? And it really is the athletes that are undersized. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I've coached a lot of these people that.
I feel like you see those guys all the time. Like, they love their Metcons, they love their cardio. They kind of feel slighted when there's a heavy lift in the workout or something like that. You know, they're like,
they're attacked,
it's a personal attack because I'm the small guy. And it's interesting, you know, that kind of changes, you know, from the competitive side is one thing, right? But now that, you know, Camille and I, our population of athletes are kind of like a bunch of people who have really, they were competitive, but they kind of aged out of CrossFit for one reason or another. Usually it's like injury or lack of progress or the statement, like, I just can't keep doing this to myself anymore. And I see one of two things. Like, I see these guys that are very much like they love cardio, but they are under-muscled to a large degree. The majority of guys, though, I'd say, are more like these guys behind me. They're kind of like that recomposition type of athlete, right? Where it's not like, yes, I want to build some muscle, but it's crazy to me that you've been eating paleo and doing CrossFit for, you know, whatever it is, 7 years, and you still have a tire around the waist. Like, you know, something's off here, right? Like, you know.
So on that topic, my wife's a nutrition coach, and she works with a lot of people that look like the guys behind you, right? That's where they, you know, they come on board and they're like, man, I just want to get shredded. Like, I just want to lose body fat. I want to recomp. And the first thing that she tells them is, you're doing 5-6 days of CrossFit per week. Let's bring that down to 3 days of CrossFit per week. And let's add in 2 or 3 sessions of just bodybuilding, of just straight bodybuilding. I love that. And her success rate with that population is so high.
Yep. And I'll tell you why people don't realize that. When they think about cutting, they think about, okay, I'm going to do tons of cardio and I'm going to starve myself down. The best way to recomposition is to build muscle. The best thing you want to see out of a program is this inverse relationship between muscle mass going up and body fat going down. Or even if muscle mass goes up and body composition stays, the body fat stays the same, you've still reduced your body fat percentage. So look,
there's a really important reason for that, right? It's because muscle mass is your metabolically active tissue, right? So absolutely. The more muscle mass, the engine
that's going to drive your metabolism for sure.
Exactly. The more you're carrying around day to day, even when we're sitting here having this conversation, us just having a high degree of muscle mass means that we're burning more calories than if we were sitting here, you know, 20 pounds lighter, you know,
it's so important. It's easier for them to get lean, but also to stay lean. Because like, you know, I've been around competitive bodybuilding the same way I've been around competitive CrossFit. And there are guys who can be eating 700 grams of carbs a day and not be putting on body fat because that's the capacity that their muscles have to dispose of all that glucose, you know? And as your muscle mass goes up, you can eat more carbs and eat more food and feed that engine. But I think what happens is people actually go the opposite direction where they try to cut down and they lose muscle mass. And now they've slowed their metabolism and then they end up with just this kind of like fat, skinny kind of look. That's harder to even, you know, stay lean with because you've essentially reduced your metabolism.
To that point, most people, they're the thing that they try to do is they try to add more Metcon or try to add more cardio when they're trying to lean out. And it's just they're, for the most part, I'm not saying that those things are bad. We come from this CrossFit background. We recognize that, you know, cardio is an important component of health and fitness, but it's not what's going to get you super lean. It's just not. It's strength training.
It's not
weightlifting either. It's not Olympic weightlifting that's going to do it either. It's you know, effective hypertrophy sets.
Yeah. And you've heard people say, like, you know, how muscle is the currency of longevity. Like, this is your best way to support your immune system. So I think that's kind of the cornerstone of training to me, is building high quality muscle mass. And the way you use that muscle mass is up to you. You want to go be an endurance athlete? Go ahead. You want to do CrossFit? You want to do powerlifting? Sure. No problem. Put those skills in. But I think a lot of people have that formula backwards, where they might be doing like 25% hypertrophy training and 75% of it is like high intensity conditioning. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the parameters and the context here, because when people ask me like, hey, Dave, you know, which program should I do? How much hypertrophy training should I do? What should that look like? What should my split be? What should the volume be like? I ask them two questions. What do you want and how fast do you want it? Right? That's kind of what it comes down to. So tell me a little bit about how you thought about integrating this stuff with CrossFit athletes in terms of how much hypertrophy training and how much CrossFit. How would that work?
Yeah. So I spent some time in the article actually talking about the phasing of training. So I did write the article thinking about competitive CrossFitters, because that's the population that I primarily work with. And my thought is that during the off season, so let's say you get done with quarterfinals or semifinals and that's the end of your season. Well, the first thing that you should be doing is going in and doing isolation, bodybuilding, hypertrophy work. Like, that should be the bulk of your training, unless you're someone who just has to build this massive engine, you know, because you've already done all the bodybuilding training. Like, that's going to be your starting point. And, you know, if you want to talk about a split, it might be 75% hypertrophy bodybuilding work and 25% sports skill.
Yeah, just to maintain your overall fitness. You're not going to lose anything. And additionally, what people don't realize is, like, you know, bodybuilders, for instance, they don't really want to do a lot of conditioning work or cardio because they want to lose their gains. This is a myth out there, because right. The truth is that maintaining really good capillary flow into the muscles is advantageous for helping them grow. So doing zone two training with your cart, with your lifting, not in the same session, but incorporating it into your day in places within a certain level of volume can actually assist in muscle growth. Or doing things like, you might call them down regulation days, or maybe it's not lifting, but it's going to be just like 45 minutes of moving and moving blood in and out of joints and letting your central nervous system calm down for a training day and just getting a aerobic base to maintain the cardiorespiratory and cardiovascular health. That's only going to help people. So it's not like cardio is evil or conditioning is evil, but at the same time, you're not going to build muscle doing conditioning workouts.
No. And if you're in, if you're, like I said, if you're a competitive CrossFitter and you're in off season, endurance takes much less time to build, especially the higher end, you know, not zone two, but like, you know, building zone
just the aerobic capacity. Yeah. You know, you can improve someone to running a 6 minute mile in a matter of months, you know,
versus building a significant amount of hypertrophy takes, you know, potentially years. You're putting on pounds and pounds and pounds of muscle mass. And though muscle mass just doesn't grow that fast unless, you know, you're someone who's spending, like you had said, a significant amount of time following hypertrophy training. Now, and as you move into,
Your body doesn't discriminate when it comes to, you know, these different signals, like for instance, like anabolic signals and catabolic signals, or signals where your body is like uptaking nutrients and synthesizing, you know, matter into muscle mass, or what's called muscle protein synthesis, or catabolic signals where you're actually trying to mobilize stored energy and getting into your glycogen stores and shrinking fat cells as they kind of convert back into glucose. Your body doesn't discriminate whether you're going to be, you know, necessarily only allocating that growth towards muscle or body fat the same way, you know, it doesn't say when you're trying to burn fat, you're only going to burn fat. You might be burning some muscle too. So there is like always that compromise, I feel, from people who say, I want to put on muscle, but I'm afraid of getting a little bit puffy. Right. And that's kind of a common one where it's like, well, listen, you know, you have to kind of take this with a grain of salt and think about your long-term goal versus what you want right now. If you really want to make any remarkable changes, you're going to have to go all in something, right? You're going to have to be like, all right, caloric surplus, eating plenty of food, positive nitrogen balance, protein through the roof, the targeted nutrient timing of making sure you're able to really take advantage of the anabolic window, and then seeing your weight climb up so that, you know, you might have somebody who, let's say they gained 15 pounds of mass in general, right, from their body weight. So they went from 200 to 215. But when they actually recomposition and diet back down, you realize, okay, well, there was probably 5 pounds of water weight from the retention of high carbohydrate diets and 5 pounds of fat mass and about 5 pounds of actual muscle. So it's not like, you know, you don't just gain only muscle, but it's that kind of incremental thing where if you can gain 5 pounds of muscle a year, that's phenomenal. That's really like, well, it's just about doing that consistently year to year where you can really completely change your physicality.
And it's like you were talking about earlier, if you have put on 5 pounds of lean muscle, then losing that 5 pounds of fat that you put on during that time, when you do switch into, you know, more of a body recomp than, you know, a bulk or whatever. I know people tend to, especially in the CrossFit world, they hate the idea of a bulking phase, but that's really, it's for some people, it's necessary. And the off season can serve as such a good period of time to put on good quality muscle mass. And then once you have put that on, it's easier to bring body fat levels back down to like your fighting weight or your competitive weight.
Yeah. So I heard you mention isolation movements. And this was one of the things when I started exploring like hypertrophy training, I started reading a lot of from a guy named Dr. Brad Schoenfeld, who's kind of the world's foremost hypertrophy expert. He writes a great book called The Science of Muscle Hypertrophy. And then he has a couple other books about, you know, putting on muscle, but he highlights these different mechanisms. And then I actually started competing. So I went into, you know, we're talking too loud. I went into the most meathead bodybuilding gym in Colorado where Phil Heath trains and, you know, tried to absorb as much as I could in terms of methodology and methods and things of that nature. But then the overlap for me was like, okay, how do I apply this to a CrossFit gym? Like, how do I apply this to a barbell or a dumbbell? And so a lot of the methods are very interchangeable where they don't necessarily need to be on a leg extension machine or a hamstring curl or a preacher curl machine to be doing overload eccentrics or drop sets or supersets or, you know, exercising time under tension or using isometric holds. But you can still do those with compound functional movements. And the nice thing is when you practice hypertrophy methods with like, you know, the compound lifts, you're not only building a lot of muscle because they're very effective at building total body size and strength, but it's a way for you to maintain athleticism. And here's the best thing. As a CrossFitter, I was so tuned into like my score on the whiteboard where I was like, man, my one rep max deadlift is whatever, 600 some odd pounds. I need to lift that today. And if I didn't, I'd feel shitty about myself. And if I did, I'd feel great, but then I'd be like hurt for the rest of the week. to me, it was an incredible relief to not have to worry about the weight on the bar, but only focus on the training effect, only focusing on the tempo and the quality of the movement and just trying to exhaust the muscle to failure, regardless of what the number on that bar might be. Because you can get hypertrophy out of varied rep ranges, varied loads. It's really the one consistent theme is the adaptation process is driven by exposing yourself to a stimulus you haven't experienced before. So it's just about making it nasty, but the weight doesn't matter, which to me was a huge relief.
Yeah, I think that's where some of the off-season benefit from bodybuilding really lies, is getting people away from constantly looking at the leaderboard, constantly comparing themselves to either themselves previously, like their old 1RMs, or to the people that, you know, are in the class or the people that they're competing with. I think that's a huge potential advantage of integrated bodybuilding style training, in addition to, you know, the adaptations on the muscle mass side. And we haven't even touched on the fact that, you know, the some of the variants and slowing things down and using integrating tempo training, you know, and increasing time under tension can improve tendon thickness, and essentially is like a, I don't want to call it rehab because that is its own thing, but it's essentially like a rehab tool for you.
Sure. I mean, the best way to enhance joint integrity is to perform holds, to perform isometric holds at the top or the bottom to build the positional strength. And we talked about, you know, that idea of speed, right? Where it's a great way to get the most return out of the least amount of effort in terms of power output. The speed is the enemy. It's really about keeping good tension on the muscle. So not just doing things like slow and controlled negatives, but slow and controlled concentric movements where muscles are shortening, which actually makes it a lot harder. And I love seeing people just being like, I don't get it. Why is this 135 pound back squat making my legs shake right now? It doesn't make sense. You know, for somebody who is at the point where they're just afraid to go heavy. They're like, I can't, I'm going to hurt my knee, I'm going to hurt my back. And now they find themselves able to train hard with these really high utility functional movements, but they don't have that load and they feel safe again. That's where I see them also seeing like there's still hope, you know, like, cause it sucks, you know, to be declining and to be experiencing overuse injuries or just having things break down. Like for someone like you or me, we love to move. We have a lot of joy and probably lifelong athletes that love CrossFit, found it. Like we can't live without training. It's sustenance for us. It's oxygen, right? And when that starts getting taken away, it can really take the wind out of your sails and leave you feeling kind of like, oh man, like it's just depressing coming in here, you know?
Lost. I had a period of time where I really couldn't train. Right. It was actually right before I transitioned into the master's division. It was about a 2-year period of time where I'd hurt my back. I was going from going hard all the time. I would get sick. I would get these respiratory infections. I would go hard one time, boom, I'd get a respiratory infection right after. And I really did have to step back. And the thing that got me back into training was using almost like, you know, like you had said, functional movements, but using bodybuilding principles to get me back into moving and training and able to compete again. And now I've been able to compete at a pretty high level as a master's athlete, where, you know, I think back to when I was like 32, 33, I could barely move as a result of the training that I was doing before.
Yeah. And as CrossFitters, it's not just about the training program. It's also about kind of like the culture and community. Like we love being in the gym. We love being part of the community. And you know, maybe we shouldn't be training hard that day, but we're here because it's social hour. You know, we're here because we just want to hang out and be around it. And I found myself, you know, as someone who worked for CrossFit HQ for a decade, you know, a long time teaching the level ones and the level twos and some of the specialty courses, so like, and having my wife being a competitive, you know, CrossFit Games athlete, all of my friends, everything was just CrossFit, right? And I found myself feeling kind of like peer pressured into training one way and feeling like, well, if I can't do a thruster, like what can I do, you know? And then when I started integrating this type of stuff, because it's different and CrossFit is, you know, in a large degree, it operates in a bubble. It was not greeted very warmly. Right? They were like, oh, you're going to the dark side. First time I said I was doing a bodybuilding show, you know, people laughed. They were like, until, you know, they saw the stage shots and then they're like, I think I want to try that. but like, you know, it's hard to break through that bubble sometimes because it's all you know. And you think, well, this is the only optimal way to train. But the truth is, the reason why I was incorporating hypertrophy training is because I did love CrossFit. Like, I love doing this stuff. I love slinging iron in the garage with barbells and dumbbells and going hard. So I had to figure out a way to evolve the program so I could continue to do it. It sounds like you had a similar story.
Yeah, and I've actually had to – I coach a number of master's athletes as well, and getting them to understand that you don't just have to go hard all the time. You don't always have to compare yourself on the leaderboard all the time, and that slowing down and using some of these principles of hypertrophy and bodybuilding can really be a way to, you know, to get you to extend your career as an athlete. Like, you're not – just because you're not going at – you know, high intensity all the time, doing your functional movements at high intensity, you might be doing them at you know, slower speeds, at tempos, worrying about time under tension. These people in their 50s are starting to hit PRs that they haven't touched in 8 or 10 years as a result of just stepping back, getting healthier, and slowing things down. Now, they're still also doing high intensity functional movements and CrossFit, right? They're still doing that. But it's not the whole program. There's other components that are involved in it. I think this conversation needs to be had, I think, at a very broad level.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, like, you know, you mentioned intensity. I think for most people listening, when they think of intensity, well, maybe not on this podcast because they're all Meathead Thunder Bros now, but for the CrossFit community, when we think of intensity, it's like, okay, how far, how fast, how many reps, what was the weight, how many rounds, right? And part of this for me was expanding what intensity can be. Right? Intensity doesn't always have to be the weight on the bar, how fast you could lift it. It could be just focusing on exhausting the muscle to failure, even if you're intentionally moving slow and throwing holds in and doing drop sets and cluster sets and shocker sets. And, you know, I think when most people think about hypertrophy training, they think about where they started. Most people started in the regular club gym. You know, they go to Gold's Fitness or 24 Hour Fitness or wherever. And they go, okay, I'm going to do, you know, 4 sets of 10 reps in the gym. Like, that's really not hypertrophy training. Like, hypertrophy training is gnarly. Hypertrophy training is very intense. It's just intense in a different way. But, you know, it's unfortunate because I think people have a very narrow view of that. And it's like, it's not like you weren't necessarily doing the wrong things. You were just doing them the wrong way, right? So now revisiting that, looking at it through a different lens. And as a CrossFitter, think about all the skills you have now going back to hypertrophy. Like, most people, when they start training, they don't know how to move, right? They don't really know how to squat or deadlift or press. They don't have the skills of we talked about the neurological adaptations. They don't work really hard. So, like, when you go in the regular gym, you see people doing terrible looking back squats and not really training hard. And now as a CrossFitter, if you go back to that and you apply those skills, you have such a high ceiling in terms of what your potential is to be able to actually retool and remodel your body, because those are such important attributes to being able to really seeing a lot of progress. So, you know, going back to what I was saying about the walking into the Meathead Bodybuilding Gym with Phil Heath, when I walked in there, I walked in like a real asshole. I said, I'm a CrossFitter and I want to compete in a bodybuilding show and you guys are going to show me how to do it. And they laughed at me. They're like, CrossFit, you're going to do some burpees? You know, they're laughing. But I started to get some real street cred once they saw that I knew how to train hard and that I knew how to move, right? So I think that is a really valuable skill most people don't even realize they have going back to hypertrophy style training.
Well, you know, one of the things we talked about earlier was the fact that, you know, if you have higher capillary density in the muscle tissue, then that supports hypertrophy training. And one of the things that we do in CrossFit is we do, you know, sets to failure and reps to failure. And you're doing all this, you know, mixed. It's not cardio, but I mean, it's CrossFit, right? It's like this thing where everything's mixed.
What it mostly is when you're talking about kind of that muscle stamina aspect of things, you know, Dr. Brad Schoenfeld, he talked about different mechanisms that can really help with hypertrophy, right? And most, you know, the biggest one most people know about is just like tension on muscles, right? So like heavy mechanical loading, you know, an 8 to 12 rep top set with good control. That's very traditional, very proven, probably the most effective way to build muscle. And then you've got stuff like concentration work, where it's really just about, you know, going through a large range of motion and focusing on a mind-muscle connection and moving ultra slow and keeping, you know, submaximal tension on a muscle until you can't go. But the last one's called metabolic stress. And this is the acute buildup of the byproducts of high rep muscle contraction. So things like hydrogen and lactate building up in the muscle, unable to escape, and it causes these inter and intracellular swelling phenomena that are great for muscle hypertrophy. So when you talk about like doing a long set of kipping pull-ups to failure, and you walk off the bar and your forearms are pumped and your biceps are pumped, what you're seeing there is metabolic stress. And that is hugely advantageous because now when you take those adaptations you're talking about from like the capillary standpoint and you say, okay, now let's go to the leg press and let's leg press 80% for as many reps as you can, you're going to outperform everyone because you have more stamina at that high, even at that high percentage. And what is such a greater stress on the body, I think, as a crosser, you have the ability to push yourself more in hypertrophy because those adaptations are already there.
I think you also just touched on why you see high-level CrossFitters have so much hypertrophy, is they're constantly getting to the point where they have a shit ton of metabolic stress. And because they have so much metabolic stress, you know, they're reaching fiber fatigue, they're getting effective sets, effective reps every single time. You know, Schoenfeld talks about effective sets. And so every time they're doing a set to failure, they're doing effective sets and they're doing tons and tons and tons of these. So I'm not saying that CrossFit is like the best hypertrophy work, but for elite CrossFitters, the reason that they are supporting so much muscle mass is because they are basically doing effective sets all the time because they're under so much metabolic fatigue on a constant
basis. And I think that's a big point of confusion for people when, let's say, you know, you're at home watching the CrossFit games and you see, you know, Rich Froning with his shoulders and his abs or whoever. Rich is
there was that picture of the guys where they were all just got out of the pool, right?
Yeah, like they all get out of the water. And this is like in 2012 and they're all jacked. Yep. Okay. Yep. And they think, well, if I do CrossFit, I'm gonna look like that.
Yep.
You're not gonna look like that. And you're not gonna look like that for three reasons. One, you don't have the genetics that those guys have.
That's the first one. That's probably the
biggest one, right? Those guys would look like that no matter what they were doing. They would still look like that to some degree. Rich would look great doing yoga, okay? He would still look awesome. Two, they're not doing the traditional CrossFit program. They're training two or three times a day. They already have a dedicated hypertrophy training day, right? And three, they're fucking nuts. They're uber competitive psychological warriors that will push themselves to failure. So when they see that and they go, oh, well, CrossFit must be the greatest way to build a big physique. Like, no, it's not. Those guys are not doing what you would get in an affiliate. What they're doing is they're doing a ton of training. They're genetically gifted and it's an exceptional amount of volume. So if you have 4 hours to train and you're gifted, you can do that and perform and look awesome. But if you're like the average Joe, you need to be doing mostly hypertrophy training.
To your point, there are plenty of people who train 3 or 4 hours a day and don't look anything like that. In fact, they go the opposite. Their bodies adapt more, you know, in the endurance realm. And what those people need, if they want to look more like the Fronings, the 2012 Froning, then they need hypertrophy.
Look at that. We're both talking about the way Rich looked 12 years ago.
Right? Right. Well, it didn't look like that now. Not like the. Well,
you know, it's crazy. Like when you bring those guys into, like, let's say you bring them into a bodybuilding gym, they're the small guys.
Yeah.
Like they are. You know, most competitive bodybuilders at the amateur level are walking around at 225 pounds and 7% body fat. Now, granted, there's a lot of other stuff that goes into that too, but it's just putting that into perspective because I think we think, wow, these guys are so big and so strong. You have to put that in the context of for a CrossFitter, to qualify that a little bit. Really cool, dude. I'm having so much fun talking to you. I feel like we could shoot the shit all day on this stuff. Tell me, you know, you mentioned, I want to go back to it, like, you know, we were talking about that bubble sometimes CrossFitters live in and the fact that they know what they know, but they don't even know what they don't know outside of that. And having a traditional strength and conditioning background, I think I love those coaches that are in CrossFit because they also understand the whole spectrum of training, right? Like they understand where this stuff fits and what other tools they can use because fitness isn't just one thing, right? It's really, you know, leveraging all these different things. One thing I see out of a lot of CrossFitters is, you know, they think that training has to be with the barbell or it has to be with the dumbbell or the kettlebell too. And I know that there are a lot of CrossFitters that also hold a 24-hour or LA Fitness membership, right, in the club gym. Yeah. And I think that being able to mix things up and get on machines holds a lot of advantages for these athletes as well, from a couple of different perspectives. One, it's usually going to keep them safer, right? So, you know, it's going to be very hard to pin yourself and get hurt on, say, a hack squat machine versus if you get pinned doing a heavy back squat or something like that. The machines are usually on tracks that are stabilized. And so removing that component of stability not only allows you to be able to keep joints in stronger, better positions, but it also allows you to recruit more muscle because you're working off of a more stable block, which makes it more effective at just accumulating muscle mass. But you don't want to omit free weights completely because that athletic component of balance and coordination, that's really where the barbell starts to outperform some of these things. So it kind of depends on what you're going after. But if you're trying to train safer and maybe make more progress with your hypertrophy training, absolutely get on machines. They're amazing.
That's one of the things I talked about in the article, is one of the things that leads to effective hypertrophy is more stability in an exercise. And so like your example of a hack squat is excellent, right? Because it is on tracks and it provides some of the stability that's required. So you can reach greater degrees of muscle fatigue, which is your stimulus for hypertrophy. But if your goal is to get, is to use this strength training that you're doing, this hypertrophy training, to transfer back to your sport, to CrossFit, or say you're a football player or something like that, then the barbell might be a better option. But how many days per week can you do barbell back squats without running into knee, hip, and back issues? You
need I think that's where, when you think about the aging athlete, right? So now you're no longer in your 20s, maybe you got some road miles on your body, or someone like me who has severe limitations, right? Like I got a mangled spine, right? I think this is where exercise selection becomes one of the most important things you can consider if you're an athlete that wants to continue to train hard for a long time, is figuring out what can I do with the barbell and still see safe progress, and what are kind of higher risk things that I'd be better off on a machine with. So for instance, like I never back squat heavy anymore, and I love back squatting. I back squatted, you know, 500 pounds every day for a year. It's like my favorite thing in the world. But I had to let that go and say, you know what? I can't really back squat heavy anymore. So it's either going to be volume, you know, volume of stuff, metabolic stress work kind of to failure, or I'm going to have to get on the hack squat machine. And what I was, you know, shocked to see is like the barbell is very high risk. The hack squat machine, I've never hurt my back on a hack squat machine, and I can load it up with a ton of weight. And I've never been able to develop the same type of leg density with machines than I have with barbell. So just because you can't do it anymore doesn't mean it's a disadvantage. It actually may end up helping you from some perspectives, and certainly from a longevity perspective.
Absolutely. You know, you were talking about having an LA Fitness membership or you know, a Globo gym. I think that's more of a CrossFit term for those. But having a membership to a place like that allows you to do things like lat pull downs, right? The most effective thing that I've ever used for improving people's kipping pull ups and, you know, max rep bar muscle ups and max rep ring muscle ups is 10 RM lat pull down work. Right, is high, like that 8 to 10 hypertrophy range lat pull down work with a little bit of a tempo, a 2-1-X-1 tempo, and just let people rip that once or twice a week. You know, they build a 10 RM and then we're doing percentage work off that. Man, that builds so much upper body pulling strength. The transfer back into sport movements has been absolutely just astounding.
Absolutely. And we mentioned the difference in these environments, right? Because like you're in a CrossFit gym, okay, you know, there's a coach, there's a community, there's that energy, you know, people are with their shirts off and bacon sizzle on the ground after the workout. And you walk into some club gyms and you're like, is this a library? You know, nobody's talking to each other. Everyone's got their headphones on. But I'll give you the real secret, the real tip. If you're someone like me, that doesn't really faze you. You're just the weird guy in the corner grunting and, you know, playing psychological warfare with themselves. But having a training partner, holy shit. I never really understood the value of having a training partner until I started doing bodybuilding. And having someone there, keeping me accountable, helping me get forced reps, spotting me, and actually tweak, you know, squeezing out those inches at the precipice of failure and being able to get like one more. I never really got that level of intensity out of CrossFit, because when it was hard, I'd be like, and I'm gonna stop.
You know? Yeah, well, because that's one of the things I think is, it's so important. This is another important topic in the, you know, in this conversation about bodybuilding versus CrossFit. When you're talking about a set to failure in bodybuilding, that is not the same as a set to failure in CrossFit. Because if you took, let's say you're mid Metcon, you're doing handstand pushups, and you go to failure in strict handstand pushups, the amount of time that you're going to have to rest before you kick up again is just exponentially longer than if you left one rep in the tank. And so yep. to failure in CrossFit is really like one rep in reserve. Always.
Oh, but yeah. And the other thing too, Kyle, that you see is like, you know, over the years, people who are new to our program, at least, they ask about like percentages, like what percent of my one rep max should this be? And I'm like, don't worry at all about percentages. Yep. Focus solely on the RPE, the rate of perceived exertion, right? So how hard it feels before you're so scared that you just can't handle the pain, or, you know, or when the movement starts to break down. And so on that scale of 1 to 10, which actually we do 1 to 11 with the RPE scale, you know, 1 is like a, you know, 10% effort, 5 is 50%, 10 is to what we call mechanical failure. So it's not when you can no longer lift the bar, it's when you can no longer lift the bar properly, when you can no longer hold the tempo or hold the position, that's mechanical failure. And then the RPE 11 is the magical rep, which is the forced rep. The forced rep where your buddy's like, come on, and then he catches you, and then you give one more, or you finish with a few partials as the muscle fails, you know. And so it doesn't really translate. The percentage thing doesn't really translate to hypertrophy training, especially not our style, which is a very mixed modality kind of almost like a conjugate style of bodybuilding, where it's, you know, all these different methods jumbled into one program, because there's things like pre-fatigue, you know, how tired you are from previous exercises, the compounding effect of the complexes, you know, that kind of stuff. So it's hard to give you a number. That might be way too much, or it may be way too little, I don't know, but your RPE will not lie.
That's another challenge. So that's a really good point, because bringing bodybuilding style training into like our group training program, right? So we've got the TTT compete track, and we have bodybuilding style accessory work built in there all throughout the season, you know, more in the off season, less as you're getting closer to competing, you know, traditional periodization style stuff. But the challenge is getting people to understand the RPE structure, and that there isn't, like, we're not going to give you a prescribed load. Like, your goal is to, maybe we'll give you target rep ranges. You know, this should be in the 6 to 10 rep range. But you should be choosing loads that, you know, you're reaching a 9 RPE somewhere in the 6 to 10 rep range. That's so different than what they're used to in the CrossFit realm, where it's a prescribed load. It's 225 deadlifts, 21, 15, 9. It's just, it's requires such a mental shift to training for effective reps and effective sets versus do this for time at this load as fast as possible. And it's like, this is measurable, but bodybuilding is measurable in, are you growing muscle mass?
Exactly. And, you know, I was lucky to have some phenomenal mentors in bodybuilding that were just, you know, they're kind of like Yoda, the Yoda of hypertrophy, right? And one of my coaches, who's probably my biggest influence and one of my good friends now, I remember going into sessions with him. They were always horrific, right? Like puking in the parking lot, horrific. But I remember just being on exercises and he wouldn't tell me what was happening. He would be like, all right, go, right? 3 seconds down, 3 seconds up, go. And I go, okay, how many I'm doing? I don't know.
So you can't.
And so Cammy and I realized what was happening, and we teach people about it in our like workshops and seminars. We're doing a course with Power Monkey Camp in Tennessee at the end of this month. And when we partner people up, we say, hey, spotters, you got to listen to your athlete when they're working, but you don't listen with your ears, you listen with your eyes, right? And you see when you go in and start helping, how far do they need to do to hit that RPE? Okay. You really got to observe the athlete, because I don't know. The metric isn't based on how many reps you're doing or how heavy it is. It's based on when that muscle is now starting to oscillate. And now yes, you're starting to see absolutely things get a little bit shaky, and then give me one more to failure. But you got to kind of start to develop an intuitive sense of that, both as a coach and as an athlete, understanding that, right? It was just like, you know, I'll do sets and I'm like, okay, I'm going to try to hit a heavy 10, and either I'll hit the 10, no problem. Or maybe it's 8 today. I don't know, but it's not, you know, it doesn't affect me of how I think myself as a person anymore.
When you're prescribing sets that are like AMRAP minus one or AMRAP minus two, another challenge is communicating to athletes. We talked about educating athletes at the beginning of this, is communicating and educating them that, you know, what they think is failure may not actually be failure. And if you want effective hypertrophy, you really do have to create that fiber fatigue. And the only way to do that is to get, you know, this close to that point of failure, or like you're saying, even going beyond that point and having assisted reps, which for most people that are in a CrossFit gym that are by themselves, you know, doing, you know, programming over on the side, they're not going to have access to that. So for them, they have to learn like how to ride the line right up to true failure and learn to like just err on the side of, you know, just beyond just before failure.
The other mistake we've had people make is they go in and they think, well, every set has to be hard as possible.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like they're looking at five sets and, you know, they're like, you know, what's the warm up? And I'm like, dude, you know, you're doing three sets of feeder sets and blood flow sets and things just to prime your central nervous system and get you warm. The whole idea, like when you look at these exercise blocks, for us at least, every exercise boils down to like one or two sets. It's a top set of this and then maybe a drop down, or maybe just a top set and some kind of intensifier at the end to facilitate blood flow before they leave the exercise. But it's like, I think CrossFitters, because they're used to going as hard as they can every single time, they have a hard time understanding that idea of what, like resting between sets. That's really hard. Absolutely. You're like, no, you need to be recovered, you know, for your central nervous system and to get the most intensity out of this. Sometimes we're intentionally mitigating that. But, you know, if we're doing heavy mechanical loading stuff, like you want to be recovered. And then the other thing is just like teaching them that, like, you got to save your bullets, because a lot of this stuff is just about stimulating the muscle growth, not just annihilating yourself. I mean, yes, it's going to be a bloodbath, but not every set needs to be a bloodbath.
When I'm talking to athletes about hypertrophy training, one of the things that you have to communicate is that the first set, the second set, the third set are not the ones that you take to failure. If you take your first set to failure, then the number of effective reps in each subsequent set is going to go down, and then it's going to go down, and then it's going to go down. And
so we try to explain it to them in different ways, because the first time I wrote this into our program, I was like, feeder set, just touch the weight. And somebody wrote, well, what does that mean? And I go, think about four. It's like foreplay. Just tease yourself a little bit.
That's a good way to put it. Foreplay sets.
Foreplay. And then you're not going to blow your load yet. Hold on. It's coming.
Yep. Yeah.
It makes it that much better. So, dude, it's so fun to talk to you. I want to send you some of our books and programs and stuff and, you know, let you take a look at it. Please steal whatever you like. And I love collaborating with smart practitioners who especially understand kind of our broader perspective, because our mission is to come up with innovative training solutions that bridge the gap between performance and aesthetics. And, you know, it's not about doing CrossFit or not doing CrossFit. It's about taking this community that we love and people who have our same story of people who are like, man, CrossFit changed my life. What do I do now? You know, how do I continue to do it? I think that's really what we want to try to support and nourish and all that good stuff. So thank you so much for coming on. Where can people find you, Kyle?
Check out trainingthinktank.com. Obviously that's where all of our programs and all of my blogs and all our education stuff is. And then I'm on Instagram, just KyleRuth_TTT, easy to find there.
Awesome, dude. Thank you so much for coming on. And we'll bro out a little bit after. I'll send you a little TV swag bag and make you a meathead.
Sweet. Sounds like a plan.
All right. Awesome.